This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
So I want to get back to time, because when I pioneered online research and I had all male bosses that were not EQ, I came to them and I said, let's migrate research from offline to online. And their answer to me was, it's not the right time. And because there was no one online at the time. And had I've listened to them and waited and watched, I would not be where I am today. And so everything that you said is so true and so relevant. And it had I not have been on a panel with the chief research officer of Procter & Gamble and asked him, when is the right time for me to come and talk to you about migrating research to the internet, and him saying, come to me next week, I would not have pioneered online research. And at that time, it wasn't the right time. I had to make it the right time and get ahead of
it
and make it work and build the ecosystem.
Yep.
And that was the first, second, and third. And so when you were talking about how behind this industry is, and of course in one of your, you know, socials, I saw you challenging the whole industry here. And what did you tell them all?
I'm not sure. I'm challenging the whole week, so I'm not sure what the clip is.
Well, I think you told them they're lying.
Yeah, I mean, I do think my biggest challenge with... I do think the biggest challenge I have with the industry, which I adore, I mean, the makeup of the people of this industry is phenomenal. Like, one of the reasons I love coming is so many wonderful people, but I think it's really disingenuous to not talk about the fact that a lot of people are selling things that they cannot believe. There was a human being on stage yesterday who said, we believe that people watch television so that they can watch our commercials.
Captured his face.
Remy, not 1992, not 1982, not 1972, not 1962, not 1952. There was never a time ever that people decided, I'm gonna watch Leave It to Beaver just so I can catch the Coca-Cola commercial. There was probably, and I've done a lot of homework on this, there was a time where the commercial was a slight enjoyment part. You were curious. It did have a different culture. The remote control had not been invented. There was a lot more creative firepower in the ad world in the 50s and 60s. Not because of anything, but because people actually saw the commercials, thus inspired highly creative people to want to make them. And so, yes, I do think that, I mean, there's people selling media here that is not transparent media. I mean, for all the wonderfulness that is outside, one thing that is not outside in any shape or form ever at Cannes is common sense. There is no version of common sense, otherwise nothing that is being said would be said. And I think that the industry is within itself. I don't think we can go and interview the 8 billion people on Earth and ask them to recall 4 commercials that they could today. There is no network television consumption going on. It's all gone to streaming. And, you know, yes, I really struggle with that. I think it's incredibly challenging for me to wrap my head around the concept of selling something that in my soul I don't believe in. And I think that happens a lot in our industry.
Well, and I think, you know, when we think about also, and I talked about this the other day, you know, Omnimedia, which is multimedia, but we don't live in a linear world. We live in an omnipresence world where consumers own what they watch, when they watch it, and how they want to watch it, which is, you know, consuming all forms of media in real time at the same time, you know, in a whole different fashion.
Comma, that is all about the content we actually want to watch.
Correct.
None of that is the things that people make to interrupt those people and try to sell them.
Correct.
When people say, Gary, you're wrong about TV. People watch sports. I'm like, people watch sports? That's very different than people watching the commercials during a sporting event. And so, and meanwhile, comma, I think this, in a, you know, this is a very global talk, but the Super Bowl ad in America is the best ad in the world. You get 60 to 100 million people actually consuming it and wanting to consume it. You know, people are always like, well, there's big events like the Oscars and the Olympics and the Super Bowl. I'm like, no. those are big events, but the variable difference between the Super Bowl commercial and the Oscar commercial, there's not one conversation about the Oscar commercial by normal people. The ad world wants to make it happen. It'll get covered. And so, yeah, I really struggle with these variables.
Yeah. And it's also why, by the way, the last measure pre us adding GEM, the gender equality measure, was likability. We added likability over 20-something years ago when social came about, because ads that people choose to watch, they watch over and over and over again, which is why we added likability and adding the emotive side, the emotion, mm-hmm. if it pulls your heartstrings.
Yep.
So I want to get to Web3 for a minute, because you have a tremendous amount of people here and a lot of women, and you are doing so much for women in Web3. And one of the things that we are trying to do is upskill, educate, awareness. We just released a great study with EWG on women in Web3, which is phenomenal. So many great results. So I hope you consume it and post it and share it. And it's you know, everything that you are doing to bring women into Web3 and to drive change and to embrace and endorse. Tell us why that's so important to you, bringing so much more women into Web3.
Because education matters. You know, I love talking about, you know, a lot of parents get mad at me because I put a lot of TikTok content of like, college might not be the answer. And I do say it a little bit different than that. And so I get tons of feedback from parents, but for the first 7 years of that content, it was all, fuck you, Gary, get out of my kid's stream, you're fucking up my child's life. In the last 3 years, it's been like, you've really helped my family. Like, we've actually had different conversations with our kids and things are happening, and it really is, again, fun to be misunderstood up front and then understood differently later. So I've always struggled with the way education is packaged and sold in the world, but the most important thing in the world is education. The reason I answered your question with education, over the last 15 years, as my life has progressed, as I've started to get more notoriety and more awareness and more eyeballs, somewhere 7 or 8 years ago, I started listening to things like this and many other things that we all consume. And I would start hearing things from individuals of like, hey, the leaders need to do something about this. The leaders need to do something about this. It's important that the pioneers of something bring everyone along. And I remember, like, you know, when you're a kid and going through it, it's not even on your radar. You're not a leader. You start getting a little bit momentum. You're sitting in the middle and you start getting kind of almost curious. And I remember like 7 or 8 years ago being pretty confident because the math was clear and I know my chemicals and my feelings. I'm like, oh, okay, like one day I'm going to be in a position where there's going to be a lot of people listening and I need to be very thoughtful about what I talk about and how I talk about it and what I do. And, you know, I think there's some people in here that faces I know for a long time, and you know, the content evolves with the context of your own life, the market, the things that you're passionate about. And so when the Web3 thing happened, you know, Web1, I was a child trying to help my dad's liquor store. Web2, I was in the middle of my life where I had already built my dad's business for him and had very little economics and had probably a lot of emotions about that like I built this humongous business, but I never got paid more than 70 or 80K a year. And so family businesses are very, very challenging. And so when Web2 came, I saw it as my opportunity. I understood something was happening. And that obviously built the foundation of what most people know about me today. Web3, when it came as I'm in a different place in my career and I had options and opportunities to do something. And so I remember very quickly saying, okay, this is different. This is an opportunity for me. I'm going to lead here because I already have a big platform. I'm going to do what I've always done. So I'm going to be historically correct. I'm going to put in the work. I'm going to execute. I'm going to communicate. I'm going to make content. But I need to be thoughtful of who and how and what I do here. And so all the education combos with you and others and just the way I've lived my life made me realize I have a chance to really help here. First and foremost, because this is something I'm incredibly proud of, I was uncomfortably focused on my community. I educated the shit out of people that followed me, and every single hour, not every day, I get an email from people who are like, you changed my life because I got involved so early and this happened and that happened. And it's incredible. Not only V Friends, like I minted World of Women minted out because of me. I minted it and went right into my Discord and Twitter and said, buy this, right? And Mumbot or Women and Weapons. And, you know, I just knew what I was watching from January to May in 20, which was, you know, highly curious Web3 blockchain individuals were the most active. It skewed the way a lot of early technology skewed. I went first at my community, which is quite diverse by nature, so that immediately started to change the way. But then when I was watching the projects themselves, I saw an opportunity and I put in a lot of work. I put in the work. I would search Twitter and search Discord and followed and waited for things that were coming from black artists, female artists. It was being educated and being thoughtful that when you have a platform, you can have a variable difference on the world. By the way, all of us can do that because that's what I was feeling the whole way. Even when I had 13 followers or 24, you're still influencing. When you're a parent, you're influencing one, two, three people very heavily, right? And so it was exciting for me. And to be very honest, it's intoxicating. I'm excited to spend the next 50 years of my life to do things that are selfishly fulfilling for me, whether they're financially or creativity, while I'm doing that, being very thoughtful about the selfless part of that as well, and being thoughtful about the things that I care about. And diversity and inclusion is something I care about. There's many things I care about. Most of all, what I care about is trying to have a conversation around self-esteem. I say it in a million different slang terms and I hide it in my content to trick people into my world so that I can then reframe success, which is for me so based on being content and happy with what you've got, eliminating envy, completely tuning out the judgment of others who have no context on your actual truth, and trying to find a way to live within the means of your financial reality so that you don't put yourself in a vulnerable spot to have to not do something you like. And so everyone's got different things they care about. And so that's what I spend my time on.
Like a motherly hug, but it really was a sisterly hug because I was going to cry because I was feeling this moment of such pride because I got to meet Gary's family at VCon, and honestly, Gary speaks such truth because you are so famous. It's true, you have so many friends, but they're such real friends. You at VCon, you know what your proudest moment was? You were surrounded by your best friends all came. Truly. From so many cities. I came for the night, you know, for the day and the night, and I walked in this auditorium. I don't know where it was. And this big auditorium and all the security staff.
It was staff. Minnesota Vikings Stadium.
Stadium.
That's where it was. It was a 70,000 square foot stadium.
It's a big fucking place, that's all I know. And there was all these security people there, and I walk in, and I, of course, talk to the security people, just like, where am I? And they said, you're in this big stadium. And I go, all the security, and he said, the security people said, you know, everyone that comes through this door are the nicest people. You know, because they're used to all these celebrity people and concerts and everything. They said, you all are so nice. And I said, yeah, because all 70,000 people or however many people were there are all Gary V friends. It's true, Gary V. We were all your friends. And even people you don't know are part of your culture, you know, because you really inspire us all to be good and kind and in a Gary V likeness. And I know you know that. It, you know, even in said this to someone the other day, like, this place was designed by women for women, and even all of you guys in here, you close the seats, you put the seats of the toilet down. You don't leave it up. And you take the napkins and put them in the trash can.
We did it.
You keep the bathroom so clean. And you're so respectful and you're so kind and, you know, inclusive. And it's a culture. And that's the Gary V way. And I was so proud of your mom because you are mommy and so yummy. And, like, I just, so nice. And that whole stadium were Gary V. like, and that is who you are. And I'm so proud of you, and I'm so inspired, and I'm so grateful. And for all of us women to be so supportive, and all of you women, I keep saying, you got to get in first. We got to stay in. Gary is always, yes, I text him, and he right away writes us back and is helping all of us get in early, educate, upload, supportive. There's no better friend to help us be first, be second, be third. And that is the truth, because we are going to write the rules of Web 3. So it doesn't become the boys' club. It becomes an inclusive, safe space. Right?
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. And then the other thing, you know, I talked about, you know, Paris Hilton was in here, you know, so vulnerable and sharing, you know, her inner truth. And I'd asked her that question, and we talked about it, you know, how she went from, you know, playing those parts of, you know, being the dumb blonde and owning her real truth of herself. And she had said to me, it's because, you know, she really realized that she wasn't happy playing that part. That was a part she played. And then she found her real self. And it's really who you are. And you said that. You are always you. You talk about that.
Being always you is extremely hard. You know, a lot of people, and let's talk about this business. I've been in it for 13 years. 13 years later, what's amazing about truth is it finds its way. Sometimes it's a day, sometimes it's a century, but truth is a funny game. It finds its way. And from when you're obsessed with the notion of not compromising who you are and being comfortable with your own skin, it comes with an extraordinary amount of judgment. I am wildly, for the people that know me best, wildly soft-skilled oriented, deeply based on kindness and empathy and compassion. However, as a communicator in most settings, a podcast, on stage, I'm incredibly over the top, highly aggressive, sports, wrestling, it's who I am. I'm incredibly comfortable in my high energy, in my tenacity, in my ambition, in my deep competitiveness. It's who I am. The problem is, when you're that guy, and this is 13 years ago, definitely today, when you're that guy, there's an incredible amount of judgment when one doesn't know any more about you. This industry, the wine business, whether like it follows me everywhere, and it takes a lot to, especially when you're proud of how you treat people and who you are, to get just a headline reading, one clip, one curse word out of your mouth. He's this. When hustle porn got thrown at me, that was devastating. One person wrote one Medium article with 50 falsities in it, but people just ran with it because, unfortunately, the world has pain, which I'm incredibly empathetic to. There's not a single time I'm faced with hate that I'm not compassionate to why it's happening. Not one time. I understand why it's happening. It still doesn't taste good when you're on the receiving end of it. And we're so quick to judge. We've become incredibly good at pointing fingers, and we're really, really scared to use our thumbs. The accountability has gone completely out of the window. You know, the leaders of the world have no civility towards each other, thus we've now started to do that. And then on top of everything else, I'm a really interesting character. I understand communication so well that if I'm trying to create change, I know that there's certain patterns of the chess move that I have to do to get people to buy in, to then later do the work that I need to do to get there, which is triple challenging, because you know you're connecting with certain individuals on one part of your life. You know that you're putting in the work to try to reframe the conversation for them in a different way, But you know that the way you're getting them in is being judged by everybody who's virtue signaling you, judging you, and it's challenging. And I always talk, I like talking about this because I always want to remind people, no, look how, in this room, everyone looks different. And today's age, which I find incredibly appropriate because for the last 8 trillion years, it was the reverse. In today's age, for the microsecond, the judgment towards a white male with no context is extremely high. I find that appropriate. It's a macro counter reaction to centuries of work. However, on an individual basis, one human being, they might have had a family that had money and lost it all. And this concept that you know anything about, I mean, think for a second right now, all of us, about the people in your direct family that don't know everything about you. I'm talking about your mother and your siblings that don't know actually every single thing. How the fuck do we know anything about each other in this room? And so for me, I'm willing to be judged because I know what I'm doing with the attention, and I'm willing to have scrutiny up front, to have the accolades later. This town 13 years ago, when we were talking about the companies that we were talking about, they shit on them. They now completely control this town. Right? And so, you know, being historically correct is incredibly gratifying. It takes incredible strength internally to deal with the short-term judgment. And I'm incredibly proud of the stories and the things that I'm doing. And I'm capable, and I take on this responsibility at a very high level. I am capable of reaching many, 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 many people that most people that have the same values that I have and want the world to look the way everybody in this room wants to look have no capability of getting to. I do that at the judgment of the people that I see the world the same way with for, so that I can later accomplish what we want to have happen. And it's probably the thing I'm most proud of in the world. And I talk about it out loud because there's others who have that ability, but they can't deal with the short-term judgment of their contemporaries or the people they respect, thus unable to accomplish what we're actually trying to accomplish. It is very hard to change the world through judgment. And for me, it's not how I see it. I want to achieve it through compassion to every single variable of how one gets there. And then, once that trust is built, have thoughtful conversations that may move the ball down the field.
Gary Vee. Thank you
so much.
Do good and be kind. Respect one another. Love each other.
Thank you, everyone.
And love Gary Vee!
Thank you.